All right, we're going to be in Ruth again. For those of you who weren't here last week, we were also in Ruth. We broke it down into, are breaking it down into two teachings. Last week we just covered the first chapter, mainly the story of Naomi's life, as it were. When I was preparing for these lessons, it kind of dawned on me that really the book of Ruth teaches itself. All we really hope to do is put some meat on its bones, as it were, and draw out a little application. Last week in our study, we looked at Naomi's life and how the story of Ruth is in many ways told through her eyes, through her life. And I hope perhaps some of you may have read it in the week. If you didn't, that's fine. But the next time you read that, look at it from that point of view. It's really told through through her life. It was a difficult study because we were looking mainly at Naomi's heartache, all the things that she had gone through and how she had suffered, really, the wreck of all of her earthly hopes, all of her earthly dreams, dreams that any of us may have had or would have, the normal things, a marriage, a family, children, success, all of that crashing down around her, excuse me. But that somehow, through all of that suffering, and how she conducted herself through that, Ruth was being drawn to God. The point being for us that the world is watching more than we know, most especially when we're suffering. Well, with the graves of her husband and her sons behind her, Naomi and Ruth set their sights on Judah, the inner Bethlehem, and the community is aghast at the sight of them. They are arriving at the beginning of the barley harvest. And we'll read chapter 2. Excuse me, y'all. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Please, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I might find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant in charge of the reapers answered and said, "She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz answered and said to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Then she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed you have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain. And she ate and was satisfied and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded the servant, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. And also you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. Again, Naomi said to her, the man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Then Ruth the Moabite said, furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants till they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, lest others fall upon you in another field. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. This chapter is so full, we will not be able to do it justice. Naomi and Ruth are in Bethlehem, presumably in the old home place. Elimelech was a man of some property, which we'll find out a little later. So they could have been staying in the old home place or staying with friends. It's not told to us. The women are relying mainly on the kindness of the community to help them meet their needs. They are just a rung or two above beggars. But Ruth has the gift of industry, of drive. And she asks her mother-in-law if she may go into the fields and glean. And she consents. Now, to glean is to pick up what's been left behind. The fields would have been full of people, men and women who were hired to reap. It's hard and backbreaking work. Most of the men would have been the mowers. With sickle in hand, they would have bent down as low as they could and cut the sheaves to the ground. Others would come behind them, presumably the maids and young folks, and they would gather those stalks and the sheaves, hence that hymn, you know, bringing in the sheaves. They would gather those stalks, the sheaves, and then put them together in bundles and tie them up, which would make them easier for them to transport them to the threshing floor. It was all very physical, labor-intensive. Well, in their cutting and in their gathering and in their binding and in their sheaving, some would have fallen to the ground. The poor could be seen in the fields coming along behind them, picking up these remnants. They would take them and beat them out so that they would have something to eat. Our God is a God of action, and it pleases Him. Action pleases God. Industry pleases Him. This entire scene, just fields and fields, acres, y'all, acres and acres of ripe golden grain, men and women doing the work. I think God was smiling at all of that. This was His provision for them. Ruth happens. Don't you like that word? She happens to come to Boaz's field. You know, we're often not given enough light to see all the way down the road or around the bend. Sometimes we have just enough light for a step or two. It's when we look back, isn't it, that we can really see the hand of God leading us and shepherding us. It comes to us, His plan for us comes to us in pieces, in bits, not all at once. And our job is to gather those pieces and put them together to try to live them out. Now, Ruth no more happens to find her way to Boaz's field than all of those people just happened to find each other at the 4:30 prayer group. Then all of those people just happened to find their way to Fredonia Hill. Then all those people just happened to find their way here. And each of us have other examples, our wives, our husbands, of what I would call divine happenings. But I like that word. Now, some may think that this method of harvesting that leaves product behind is a poor business model, and it is. It's not very effective. Looks like you would pay someone to come along behind there and just get that loose stuff behind. Add it all up, it could be quite a bit. Some may think, well, it's nice. It's nice. But the poor are allowed to come behind these workers and to gather this grain. That's kind of sweet, isn't it? Otherwise, just be wasted. But actually, it's God's provision for the poor. It is actually Levitical law. And I'm going to flip over and read that. I didn't mark it. Let's see. Genesis, Exodus. Let's see. Without the tabs, I'd be lost. I did not mark this, y'all. Sorry. That's Leviticus 19. It's just a couple of verses. I'll read it to you. You don't have to turn to it. I'll teach me. The law. Now, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field. Neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Nor shall you glean the vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy and the stranger. That's interesting. The needy and the stranger. God foresaw we would have them among us and provided for them. You know, remember where Jesus says, the poor you will always have with you. It's true. And at any time, you may do for them what you would like. God foresaw this, the need for the poor and the strangers. Naomi and Ruth were benefiting from God's ordinances. Both were needy, and Ruth was a stranger. Now, some might say, well, aren't the poor a product of their own bad decisions? Sometimes. Well, doesn't God help those who help themselves? It's not in the Bible. People quote that a lot. It's not in here. It's an old saying. It has some truths in it, but not the truth. It also has an air of stinginess about it. Over in James, we're told that when a friend comes to you and says, could you help me with this? And we say, go, be warm, be full, but don't provide him what he needs. Good as that. Now, even with this fumbling as a teacher you got up here, surely you can piece together the applications. It's not political. It's not about borders or immigration or welfare. It's about me. And it's about you. Growing up in the parsonage, I saw a lot of needy people. Now, I asked my dad, why? Why are these people in our lives? His reply was, well, it's very Brother Dodson-like. God puts them in our paths to see what we'll do. What Boaz was doing here, up to about verse 7, is not generous. It's not being generous. Boaz is being obedient. He was obeying Levitical law. That doesn't make him generous. It makes him a man of character, a man of principle. Tithing. Everybody's antenna shot up. Everybody woke up. Tithing. Tithing is not generosity. The Bible doesn't say God loveth the cheerful tither. It's something we're supposed to do. It's important. Let me explain it. Had Boaz not shown up till after the harvest was over, had Boaz never met Ruth, she would be provided for because of their obedience. Make sense? Boaz's obedience. Up to this point, Boaz has not met Ruth, but he's heard of her. He sees her. He meets her. And then Boaz's kindness comes to the surface. His obedience, next, his kindness. Boaz says to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go glean in another field. Do not go on from this one. Stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. You are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink what the servants have drawn. That's kindness. This is good counsel he's given her. Stay with his workers, stay in his field. Remember, she is alone, She is a stranger, and she is vulnerable. In Proverbs, we're told that what is most desirable in a man is his kindness. Steve was all around that this morning in Proverbs 3. It says to bind it around your neck. Write it on the tablet of your heart. A man's kindness is what's most desirable. Now, had Boaz just left it like that, he would be a little bit like the place in James. May your wages be full. But he doesn't. He invites her to eat with them, to come and sit close by. And then he serves her himself. Sound familiar? Ruth's devotion to Naomi is unwavering. Ever mindful of her, she saves some of her own food back for her mother-in-law. This is not lost on Boaz. As they return to work, Boaz's generosity comes to the surface. It begins to show itself. He instructs his servants to let her glean, even among the sheaves. Boaz's obedience, his kindness, his generosity. He even says for them to pull out from the sheaves themselves, from the bundles, and leave it for her. Now, he doesn't just give that to her. He has them put it on the ground. She goes and gets it. Again, her industry is all through this. She works until evening. And she makes quite a haul. She takes it all to her mother-in-law, her faithfulness. And she shares with her even what she saved back from her meal. Naomi is delighted. When my boys were little, I don't remember them ever being too little. When my boys were little, I would get often, and don't not as much anymore, but often I would be taken out to eat by a salesman. I would order the biggest thing on the menu. I would order the largest order of chicken strips, the largest order of catfish, the largest order of whatever. And I would eat what I wanted. I made sure I was full, don't get me wrong. And I got a to-go box. You'd have thought I was a superhero. I mean, I'd come home. I think they could smell it from the street. I'd come home, Mom would holler out, Daddy brought something home, and they'd all come running. They were delighted that their dad thought of them. When Naomi learns that Boaz has shown them so much kindness, she explains to Ruth that he is one of their closest relatives and that she should stay close to her maids and work only in his field. 22 and 23, Naomi said to Ruth, "It's good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, lest others fall upon you in another field." So she stayed by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest. Now, the time span between chapter 2 and chapter 3 is really not known to us. It's safe to say it's more than a few days. Remember, this would have been a very large harvest. This is not a backyard farm. This is not a couple of acres. It's fields and fields and fields of grain. Probably weeks. That it's not really important, but it's just something to note that things, what we read in a few minutes was weeks, months, maybe a year. Uh, We don't see Boaz following Ruth around. He's not fawning over her. He is a man of business. And he has much to do. And he has many, many people counting on him. Remember, when we first looked at Ruth, there was a famine, and how that would have pushed out tens of thousands of people. Many people were counting on people like Boaz. He's busy, but he's listening to the reports. And it's doubtless that he has his eye on her. I would say that he's beginning to set his affections on her. Chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? And now, is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until after he has finished eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you shall do." And she said to her, "All that you say, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of a heap of grain. I love that image. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled. And he bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first, by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now it is true I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before no one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Again he said, "Give me the cloak that is on you and hold it." So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" She told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." This is an interesting chapter. It has, at least for us, some sticky spots in it. There are customs here and traditions that we don't understand. Ruth doesn't fully understand. Her reply to Ruth is, "All that you say, I'll do." The harvest is over. The mowers and the reapers have moved on. These would be itinerant workers. Work one field, then another, grain, then grapes. Now the time for separating the grain from the stalks and the husks is at hand. Where Ruth beat out her little portion with a stick, this would be a very large-scale operation. Oxen would pull heavy sleds over the piles and piles of grain or stalks. Men and women skilled in this work would employ winnowing forks and sieves, all of which would be just a whirl of activity, separating the grain. The workers would have been in constant motion, and the grain would have piled up into heaps. Boaz would be happy. Well, in the midst of all of this activity, Ruth slips in, unnoticed. She has bathed, anointed herself, and put on her best clothes. She lingers on the outskirts of all this activity, where no one will see her. And from the shadows, she watches Boaz. Ruth is no maid. She is a grown woman. The bloom of her youth would have faded a bit. Years of hardship and sun would have formed a few lines around her eyes, maybe across her forehead. But I feel safe in saying that Ruth, both in feature and in form, was a beautiful woman. She was attractive. Why else would she be in danger from unscrupulous men in other fields? The work is done. Boaz, having drunk his fill, goes off with a merry heart and falls asleep. Ruth does exactly what her mother-in-law told her to do. There is nothing sexual here. That's over here. There is nothing sexual here. Anyone that thinks that there is something sexual here, that there's some alluring, some attempt at tempting or conniving, has not carefully read the first two chapters of this book. The character of Naomi and Ruth are proven to us to be above reproach, above suspicion. With all that we know about Naomi, Do you really think she would advise Ruth to do anything immoral? No. Let me say it for you. No. No. Read it yourself. All the people of the city knew that Ruth was a woman of excellence. She is the living, breathing embodiment of the Proverbs 31 wife of excellence. She lacks the resources of Boaz, but in every other way, she is his equal. Boaz again shows us his character. He does not take advantage of Ruth. He sends her home, back to her mother-in-law, with a gift and a promise that he will do all he can to redeem her. Chapter 4. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. Behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoke was passing by. So he said, "Turn aside, friend, and sit down here." And he turned and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the closest relative, "Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell a piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here, before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me, that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance." And the closest relative said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man would remove his sandal and give it to another. This was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself." And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are my witnesses today. I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased may not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birth. You are my witnesses today." And all the people who were in the court and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem." They didn't know it, but they were prophesying at the time. They were prophesying. "Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, through the offspring which this the Lord shall give you through this young woman." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name be famous in Israel. May also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer in your old age." You thinking back to chapter 1? Everything that happened to her. "Your daughter-in-law who loves you is better to you than 10 sons. It's given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap, became his nurse. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. What a great story. Naomi has a piece of property that she needs to sell. She's too old to work it. She has no sons to help her manage it. By selling it, she will have some means of providing for herself and Ruth. The right to buy the property falls first to the closest relative. Boaz is second. This is an interesting exchange here. Again, we don't understand the customs. The first in line is offered the property, and he jumps at the opportunity. Like Boaz, he's probably a man of some means. But when he's told that he must take Ruth in the bargain, he quickly changes his mind. Acquiring a Moabite woman and her destitute mother-in-law are not on his to-do list. But this relative doesn't know what Boaz knows. That Ruth is a treasure. The men make their deal in front of witnesses. Boaz buys the property and takes Ruth as his wife. There is nothing. No ordinance, no law, no constitution, no amendment that has elevated men and women like the gospel. On the surface, Ruth had little to offer. No dowry, no property, no noble name. All she had to offer was her heart, her devotion, her industry. I want to be careful here, but listen to me. Boaz could have had Ruth. Boaz could have had Ruth. He could have kept her on the side. Remember, she was a foreigner, very little protection. There's no rule of law really here. Could have kept her on the side, on the fringes of his life, on the outskirts of his love and of his heart. But he doesn't. Boaz marries Ruth. Think of that. He brings her into the center of his home, the center of his heart, the center of his love. This is a picture of Christ and his church. We have little to offer. Our hearts, devotion, industry, love. And yet Jesus brings us into the center of his heart, the center of his love, the center of his kingdom. Jesus marries us. Listen while I read to you from Hosea. Therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak kindly to her. It will come about in that day, declares the Lord, that you will call me my husband. And I will betroth you to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in loving kindness and compassion. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you will know I am the Lord. I will also have compassion on her who has not obtained compassion. Does that not ring true? And I will say to those who were not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God. When Naomi and Ruth left Moab, they were destitute. They were crushed in spirit. They had no idea how their story would end. But God. Don't you love that? It's all through the scriptures. But God, in his faithfulness, cushioned Naomi's fall, comforted Ruth, and made glad the heart of Boaz. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this wonderful story, for your great mercy, Lord, that you put it in our scriptures, for the encouragement of it. We thank you, Lord, that you have taken us into the center of your life, that you have married us, as it were, or that we're not on the fringes of your love, but in the center of it. Lord, make this alive to us. Make it alive to us, Lord. Bless us in this week ahead. As we move through our lives, Lord, help us to piece together those things that you are putting in our paths, those happenstances, Lord, for your glory. Amen.